is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, good afternoon. It's Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2 p.m. That's the East Coast time. Some of my buddies from the Academy are listening across the country at different time zones. 1160 a.m. WVNJ. Let me throw out some call signs right now. We have drhradio.net. That's go to the comments page regarding the content of the upcoming program, which is just beginning. There's also the 800-962-1160. You could call that in, and we'll see if we can help you with any questions you have regarding disasters and emergencies and preparedness and so on and so forth. I'm actually jumping right into something because something that's on the news, and also I have a personal attachment to, is the Memphis flooding. I was, like I said in the previous shows, I was down there off and on since late January at a disaster restoration academy owned and operated by Service Master, which is a disaster restoration business, which is the business that I'm in. As you know, I'm CPP, Emergency Services and Restoration, and I've collaborated with them. And we got some exciting things coming down the pike with business and some products, and also a lot of new schooling that I learned. I've been in the business a long time, but I learned a lot of things in my time down in Memphis. Saw the city, nice little city. I tell you, nice. We had some nice recreation besides the day and a half that a good friend of ours, Jerry Giesinger, who's the academy director. He's down in Memphis. He's on the phone. I became friendly with Jerry on many fronts. Jerry, I'm glad you can give me a quick call this morning, this afternoon, I say, because you're in the thick of things down there. Why don't you? You know, you get the news information from up here in the East, but you know, you're living it, and I know you're on high ground. But why don't you again? Hey, Jerry, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Long time. Let's just looking at the flooding. I just heard another report that it's crest and it's coming down. But there's a lot of things entailing there that I don't think you get kind of like a colorized version of what's happening. Why don't you give us the
well,
PG?
I'll see if I can help your listeners out a little bit. First of all, I want to let them know that you can be assured, everyone, that Chris was a stellar student when he was here. So stand out. We'll give him an A-plus grade any day that he comes. But
I never received my test scores, Terry.
Memphis, just to kind of give you a view from this perspective, Memphis is really kind of has two different looks, if you will. The river, of course, Memphis sits on one side of the river, directly east of the river. So everything of Memphis is east of the river, and it's known as the Bluff City, and that's partly because the downtown area literally sits on a bluff, so it's relatively high. The problems we have, and it's a two-sided city. I live about 30 miles east. The area that I work is in the 20 to 25 miles east of the river. So out here, other than the fact that there are some emergency support systems in place, as a matter of fact, across the parking lot from my training center, the dog rescue group is set up. They've got a huge area. They've leased out a portion of a building or have been given access to a portion, and they're taking in the emergencies. It's an emergency shelter for animals of all types.
And it's
been a steady stream coming in and out. Of folks there,
being up here, there's not we don't have too many farms anymore. It's not the Garden State anymore, Jer.
No, okay. Well, the problem we have, Chris, down here is that, and just to kind of give it a quick little geography for your listeners, is that the problem we have is we have a river south of the city called the Nankana. We have two rivers on the north side of the city called the Wolf River and the Loosahatchee. And as everybody knows, rivers drain from, you know, they're going to drain into the Mississippi. Well, the Mississippi River is so high right now, what literally is happening is that those rivers are not allowed to drain. So what's backing up is not so much the Mississippi, but the rivers they can't drain in. A week or so ago, we had 11 inches of rain over a period of 3 days. And so the areas that have really flooded are the low-lying areas on the north side of the city and the south side of the city. And those are typically the poor areas, the low-income areas.
Mm-hmm.
We're already, and you're probably not seeing much of this on the news yet, but there's already talk within the city that many of those areas will not be rebuilt.
Wow.
And that those folks will end up having to move someplace else. And, of course, many of those people, because of the poor areas of the city, have no insurance coverage. They've lost everything. So it's fairly devastating. And the irony of it is, and it is an irony, is out 20, 30 miles east of that, life goes on as normal. And so it's kind of sad. from that standpoint.
Because you experienced the early 90s up in North Dakota with those floods.
Even earlier than that.
Oh, was it earlier than that?
Yeah, I was back in I was actually there in the, I'm going to really date myself here, Chris. 1969 was the major flood. The mid-70s were the floods that I was involved in relative to working with property losses and so on. And an interesting spin to that is what's happening up there now. They are actually experiencing a tremendous, one of their worst floods since that time is now in place and ongoing in North Dakota. And so what's happening 1,500 to 2,000 miles away is going to have an impact here in Memphis. The mountains of Montana are going to receive another 2 foot of snow. They have had 141% increase in snowpack this year. They're about a month behind on their snow melt. So all of that water that's up there has yet to come down the Mississippi. That all drains into the Mississippi from the Missouri. So we're looking down here, 2,000 miles away almost, at a very, very long summer of very, very high water.
Wow. I mean, that's not even on the radar for news reporting.
No. Another thing that you probably don't see much of, and Chris, I don't know if you made it there or not, but to the south of us is an area called Tunica. And that is the casino area. There are 9 very large Las Vegas, Atlantic City-type casinos that are in what are known as the River Chutes, which gambling is illegal in Mississippi, but these, for all practical purposes, these very large casinos are actually on moorings that float in River Chutes. Every one of those casinos has now been shut down because, in fact, they are floating. They have flooded. And they will probably stay closed for 6 to 8 weeks.
Well, you know, and then there's the collateral damage of income. You know, now you have, besides the natural disaster, now you have the dollars, you know.
Yeah.
People out of work. It's the guys we had on last week from ACP, the Association of Contingency Planners from New York City and also Long Island, they were talking about Japan. We talked a little bit about it when we were back down there recently. Japan, you know, manufacturers, and we have, you know, let's just call it widgets for argument's sake, that come over here in other parts of machines and so on and so forth. Now you're getting a log jam with that because there's no supplies. So now you're looking at the Mississippi. You're looking at what, 10,000-15,000 people who work in those casinos without income.
Yeah, well, they have, the casinos have gone ahead and indicated they will sustain their salaries for them in the absence, but they still lose the gaming revenue.
Yeah.
And the state of Mississippi will lose tremendous amounts of tax dollars coming off of the gaming. Another piece that's interesting, and your viewers won't see that from here, and we'll see it as we go down to the river, and it's that traffic, it's the barge traffic. These barges will carry, a single barge will carry the equivalent of 70 tractor trailer loads worth of whether it be merchandise, whether it be goods, commodities, whatever it is. And a single barge, or tugboat can actually move probably about 100 of those, barges at one time. And so you can get an idea of the tremendous amount of goods that are moving up and down the Missouri and, or Mississippi, and they are doing it now. Even in this high water time with this rushing water, these barges continue to go until such a time as they feel as though that it's too dangerous for them to run. So
if they don't move,
there's a lot of commodities lost.
Yeah, right. I mean, and again, jobs and commodities. Is there a slowdown in any of that, Jer?
Well, they shut them down at once in a while because of the if in some of the areas in the upper to the north of us where some of the levees are still in place, the river had gotten so high that there was concern about barges as they moved. Again, 100 unit barges moving up and down the river, that the wake was so great that it may wash out the levee.
Right.
So
right,
they
right.
would shut them down for a little bit. And then when they felt the safe again, the Corps opened up the river traffic again.
Yeah. This is WVNJ, the 1160 AM Disaster Recovery Hour. If you wanted to ask Jerry a question, we only got a couple minutes because we're shooting off, and I caught Jerry in between classes. Jerry's got another academy he's teaching down there, drhradio.net, and there's also 800-962-1160. So, Jerry, regarding, you know, unfortunately, you know, we're in the disaster business, and so how are my any cohorts, any coworkers down there busy with work yet?
No, because really we're still standing. It's going to be a while.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had people out of their homes for a lot, maybe 10 to 12 days in some cases. And as you know, Chris, the damage is already done. If your house is inundated in 2 to 3 to 4 feet of water, and even though it crested today, and it crested at 47.85, which was 1,500ths below the prediction of 48, with all that water coming from the north yet, and we still have to relieve the pressure off of those rivers that drain in, this water is not going to go anyplace for a while. It may have crested, which means that it shouldn't go any higher, but it's not. It can't go anyplace. There's just too much water up north that's got to come yet. And as a North Dakotan, I'll tell you that when the mountains in Montana, right now the Garrison Dam, extremely large in North Dakota, is going to be running at 49,000 cubic feet a second of water. That's maxed out in order to try and they have to, all of those dams as they come down from North Dakota through South Dakota and into Missouri, all of that feeds into the Mississippi. And all of that has got to come down yet. So this water is going to be around a long, long time.
Mm. I mean, you get the double whammy, really. I mean, last month with the tornadoes in that whole vicinity.
Yes.
I was talking to Mr. Scribner and Tommy McCarver on a couple of those, you know, to stay in touch, make sure they're safe down there. But so you have that now, and insult to injury, you have the Mississippi and the tributary type of rivers coming off that. Hey, Jerry, I really appreciate it. I will see you in July. And I really appreciate it. Gerald, you know what? I'd like to have you come back on because I want to talk about some of the schooling and certifications.
Absolutely.
That people, you know, in our, you know as well as I do, there's guys doing our business who just should not be doing our business, you know, and people are hiring them and so on and so forth. So give my listeners a true education from someone who's been teaching it for over 20-some-odd years.
Now, don't age me too much. Thank you for that.
Hey, let me tell you, if anyone ever gets a picture of Jerry, the guy's in fabulous shape. He's like Charles Atlas. Makes me look like, well, I won't go that far. But, Jared, thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you
Chris,
soon.
I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. We're going to take a little station break, and we've got my other guests going to join us. Give us a few minutes. Come right back.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942. We'll be right back.
right, we're back. It is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2 p.m., 1160 a.m., WVNJ. Call sign is drhradio.net. You go to the comments page, and regarding this program or previous programs, if you podcast, want to throw out a question to me and order my guest, go for it, definitely. And also the 800-962-1160 number. Jerry's still listening, thanks, Jerry. Appreciate you taking time out of that class to talk to me about what's cooking down there in Mississippi and what's actually not cooking. There's too much water. On the phone, I got a couple of some new associates, guys with deep knowledge in the preparedness world. One is Mike Gianchetta. Mike is also owner of Gianchetta Environmental Services. Did I say that right, Mike?
Gianco Environmental.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. You know what? I have the Godfather. Every time I think of the Jenko oil, you know, A-Pop will get there, right? But and also Chris Green. Now the guys are partnered up and part of a corporation. It is called National Ready Corporation. Guys, I can give the intros, but I would love for you because it's extensive. It's you guys with the incredible backgrounds and preparedness, whether it's John Q. Citizen, the military, municipalities, cities, so on and so forth. Chris, I can start off with you. How you doing, Chris?
Very well, Chris. I appreciate your time.
No, it's definitely a pleasure. I met Mike through the phone. We've been doing a lot of phones, and also Chris. I was lucky that my brother John introduced me to Mike, and then Mike introduced me to Chris. And their corporation is something that I have a lot of passion for, and these guys are definitely they've been doing it a long time. Still young men, just like myself. At least I think I am young. Guys, Chris, why don't you start out with the basics and of the National Ready Corporation? Get the listeners all warm and fuzzy.
Oh, sure, appreciate it. We met by happenstance, via phone, via the network, the social network that you're talking about. But the National Ready Corporation, was founded by public safety professionals with extensive experience in their, their various areas of expertise, which would be public safety, law enforcement, emergency management, restoration, recovery, alternative energy. We also have experience, internationally, federal, state, local, commercial, small communities. We provide services, both consulting, what we call material and non-material solutions to all levels of government, including non-government organizations. So it's really a group of guys with knowledge in different areas pulling together to provide those in need with expert assistance, with a one-stop shop of solutions for the full life cycle of emergency management.
Michael, you're also have some extensive knowledge with the emergency services out there on Long Island with your environmental company that you're part of, and also you have some other things you do. Is it the Coast Guard or as a first responder? I can't for quite
Coast Guard Auxiliary.
That's right. That's right.
Where I have been involved for the past 2 or 3 years. Like Chris, HAZWOCA certified in hazardous material areas.
Mm-hmm.
Providing environmental assessment, abatement, remedial activities, fire, water, flood, restoration, and all elements of environmental, related needs.
Now, when I was speaking with the guys last week from ACP, Associate Contingency Planners, this takes it to another level. I mean, there's the awareness. This is awareness, and also there's applicable things that you are saying. Okay, here, this is what you actually need. Chris, why don't you talk about some of the people you're trying to reach out there and that you already have reached and some of the products that you guys have, because I was just talking to somebody recently in the insurance business, a very large commercial insurance company, and they readily admit that 75% of the people are completely in the dark on preparedness.
Sure, and that's the people we want to reach out to, and it's really our motto is all disasters are local and preparedness begins at home. You and I talked a little bit earlier about we were both huge proponents for the community emergency response team concept. And that really strengthens the community. So the folks we're trying to reach out to covers the whole gambit, all the way from the individual to the family to the community, up into the businesses, the local, state government, as well as federal and international folks. and what we try to provide to people are capability. It's not just a single thing. If I give you a tool, that's not all you need.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, awareness and education is all part of it, training and exercise. I've written a lot of local and national level policies in the past. I've been part of writing them. A message that holds true throughout all these is that a true capability can exist until it's been properly organized, manned, trained, equipped, exercised, evaluated, maintained, and sustained. I mean, that's a mouthful, but to make sure we meet these minimum capability standards that are out there that we talk about, the target capabilities list and these other things that we talk about in federal policy and NIMS and the federal response, national response framework, et cetera, out there. That's true. We can't just give I give you a thing once, or I give you training once or equipment once and expect for that to be lasting. Training, education are all perishable items. I mean, it's a perishable skill, perishable knowledge that's out there. And another thing that we preach is in most emergencies, you are your own best first responder.
Right, right. We were talking about that earlier this morning. And we tapped a little bit on another country out there that does that makes their citizens volunteer and do some civic service, and I would be all for that, Mike, out on the island, you guys see your fair share of the storms. It's kind of weird the way it kind of skips Jersey a little bit and it hits a little bit of the city and then whacks you guys on a continual basis. With the National Ready Corps. So I know there's a big event coming up that I'm hoping I'm going to be able to come out there and join you. Where do you guys want to? Where's your target number one? Is it John Q? Is it or you want to hit larger with the municipalities? Because Chris, you have a lot of knowledge. By the way, also you were down in Tennessee. You know there's lots of water down there. Hopefully no one in your family is affected by that yet, or the tornadoes. But Where are you seeing that client where you can get some good traction and say, listen, we got to get these people aware of what's happening out here?
I think the key is that our ability, our expertise, and our interest is to address, all of the verticals that are present. I think it all starts, like in any situation, at the top. When we can address, the municipalities, the agencies directly, and provide them with the means and the mechanisms to render their own support, that provides the ability for them to assist where immediate needs are identified. Our goal is to save lives, and by providing them with not only the necessary information to determine where some of those risks can be identified, the biggest challenge that we see is to provide the solution. And with the equipment, with the rapid response kits that are available that we are now providing to, federal, state, local, municipal, and obviously the individual citizen, it provides them the means to be self-sufficient for an extended period of time in a condition that is not, general first aid, but true, means for life-saving, measures.
If you just join us at WVNJ, 1160 AM, Disaster Recovery Hour, I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. We're going to go to a break in a few minutes, and we'll want to talk about some of those kits, because we've talked with some other people about kits. With the economic downturn, and you're seeing things you didn't see before with the incidences that are happening out there. You didn't see small police forces getting shot at with a regular domestic call. It was usually an argument, if you will, and which is my understanding with some of my police friends. It's one of the most dangerous calls to go on. It's a domestic because you have emotions and psychological issues usually involved in that. But you're seeing guys coming up on home. Single-family homes, nice neighborhoods getting shot at now, and it's all over the place. So, I want to go to a break, but I want to talk about those kits and how they're applicable to those types of situations, because I don't think the public really knows the severity of those jobs, and even the volunteer fire departments. I mean, there's the paid guys, and they go through all
the
training.
That's exactly correct.
You know, but the volunteer guys, what are we talking about? 70% of the firemen in the country are volunteers, and there's a lot of training, a lot of time, and you know, a pat on the back would be nice. But let's go to a break, and then we'll talk about those kits and how we can hit home on that. All right, be right back.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. CPP is the answer. CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company. With 25 years of experience in emergency management and restoration, their seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition.
Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next?
Fire, smoke, water, or mold, CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, they've got answers. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
I know it's tough to hear me with this firefighter's air pack on, but it's the only way I can be in this smoldering pile of ashes that was my office. And I could get in trouble, but I hope you won't make the same mistake I did, since at least one in four businesses that suffer this type of loss never reopen. So here goes. Just 3 days ago, we sat in this melted wreck of what used to be a conference room, talking about how good things were. Over there was the tech room. The fire's bad enough, but the water damage really gets me. Look, here's an article describing us as visionaries. I should have done our disaster plan, but with everything else, I just didn't see this coming. Visionaries, huh? Well, the good news is, at least the ashes can't burn down.
There'll always be a few fires to put out around the office, unless it's not around anymore. But when you have a disaster plan, you can adapt, recover, and stay in control. Go to Ready.gov and make your company's plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
Welcome back. Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Again, it's always 1 and between 1 and 2 p.m. on Tuesdays, 1160 a.m. WVNJ. I do have a quick, guys, before we pick up again, I do have a quick question that was with the first segment of the show from Michelle. And said, although flooding in Mississippi may not be our backyard here in the Northeast, I'm sure there must be some ramifications. How will this affect us and what can we do? You know what? Jerry was talking about the amount of commodities and supplies that are shipped up and down the Mississippi with those barges. And like I said, just like with Japan, some of the things are not making its way over here because they can't produce them anymore. So there's going to be some issues, whether you feel it at the grocery store, I don't think. I think you're just going to see it in the manufacturing industry. That's my opinion. If some expert out there is listening, here, chime in, come in, call in the show. Maybe you can help out with that. But let's get back to this other part of the program with Chris Green and Michael Giancetta from the National Ready Corporation. Guys, before we went to the break, we talked about some of the craziness that is happening at the Yaseeta News, where, you know, guys getting just pulling people over for speeding, and boom, a guy gets shot, like the guy down in Tom's River. It's just insane. I shouldn't say popular, but a product that you guys do produce for these kits is for law enforcement and the military. Why don't you give me some of that, Chris?
Sure. Well, one of the kits that we produced was an advanced preparedness kit, and that was for critical operations. It basically was set up to sustain critical operations for 24 to 72 hours based upon the threat and the risk. The other kit we have is called an advanced, the series of kits or advanced casualty care kits. And they range from basic individual kits all the way up to mass casualty kits to field expedient hospitals. So we can field expeditionary hospitals to the disaster stand. The kits all contain, when we get to the casualty care kits, they contain advanced hemostatic agents, specialized bandages, and other materials that are meant to stop the bleeding. Basically, these are super hemorrhage kits that are out there. So it's not your Band-Aid, it's not your aspirin, mm-hmm. it's not your wall kit that we usually call the owie kit.
The owie kit, right.
The owie, the boo-boo, exactly.
So these are standalone kits or add-on kits to a current, tactical medic's bag that's in there, and it's meant to stop the bleeding in seconds by minute. If anyone's ever been injured on scene before or work on somebody, that's the second count when you're bleeding out. So that's the sole purpose of these kits is to extend that time of life so we can get you to definitive medical care.
If you didn't know, I don't think I mentioned it, but Chris is an EMT, still on call. I believe it's a scanner in the background.
Yeah.
But now the kits, I was at my daughter's softball game last week, and the first time I ever saw this, it was a defibrillator that was mounted to the snack stand, and I don't know. I'm sure you guys have seen some municipalities, especially nowadays, they're hurting for funding. Let's have a bulletproof vest drive. So because they're expensive. Right, so they're out there. Towns are collecting nickels and dimes at red lights and so on and so forth. And now you have a defib because a lot of kids nowadays are. We had three kids. I think 3 months ago died of cardiomyopathy, which is an undetectable heart disease. At a basketball game, or was at a football game, and I can't remember where the other one was. But these, they're not everywhere. They're not in schools. And I think they should. A park should have it. I mean, it's got to be under lock and key, obviously. But these kits are in the same vein, right? I mean, these kits should be accessible for sporting events or in schools, and there should be some form of training, X amount of teachers. This is my opinion, and some think like, yeah, it's too horrific for the little kids to or too much intel for the little kids to understand. I don't know. What's your feeling on those types of things?
If I may, Chris.
Go.
You absolutely recognize, what we have seen and been talking about for some time now, and our goal is wherever a defibrillator is found, we feel strongly that a mass casualty kit, a random act of violence kit, an active shooter response kit, depending on the environment in which we're speaking, where it would be placed, is certainly warranted, needed, and unfortunately something we're seeing far too often.
Right.
In the case of, the financing and the equipment costs, we're working closely with the agencies trying to help identify, federal grants that have been made available, obviously through the charities and the foundations that support these agencies are working closely with us. They recognize the need, they recognize the benefit of the kits that we have. These are custom kits that are direct to, as I said earlier, life-saving measures. These are the kits that will make a difference when seconds count, as Chris had mentioned. And we do see a fair amount of, a significant increase this year, unfortunately, in the amount of random acts of violence, active shooter response issues. And the fact is that when an incident occurs, whether it's in a public building or a private building, EMS, the medical teams, unfortunately, just do not get access to treat the wounded and critical, you know, critical care need until the incident has either been neutralized or you know, the threat has been neutralized or eliminated, which means, you know, there could be minutes, sometimes hours, before
right.
medical teams can actually address, you know, the needs of the wounded. And our kit is designed to be an in-house kit that can be rendered almost immediately, and its use with some basic training can, you know, really make a difference in life and death.
You know, it's the Disaster Recovery Hour, and we talk a lot about property and what you can do before and being prepared before a disaster happens, a flood or a fire and such. But this is real life. And you know what? It's no longer just the property thing. The show is morphed into this, you know, incidents and shooters. And a good friend of ours, Felix Nader, you know, if you wanted to check out that interview, that's on a podcast on my website. This is the society we live in. And I don't think, I mean, the show's not doom and gloom, but you know what? Being prepared, you're halfway to the goal line. At least that's how I look at it. And the passion that you know, I'm reading the bios, and Chris's bio is extensive, so is Mike's. Mike was talking about, you know, I work 20 hours a day. Then the weekend I try to turn it off for my kids, but that's what it takes for being prepared and being in the public eye or the private sector. Of it is a broken record, but you have to. I mean, when we went to school, we did the ABCs. It's like, okay, I'm never going to use this in real life, but you know what? You hit it 20-25 times, you remember. And it's just a constant thing. And when I go to my properties and fires, I get some smart people. There's a lot of smart people in our area, but they didn't have contact information. They didn't have backups to medications. They didn't have. It's just amazing because you get consumed with the 9 to 5s, or really, you know, 5 to 10 at night. Those are the real hours of a job. But so when you have the kits, or even when you're just educating, it's I think people get that feeling of, you know, this is what we need. This is the society we live in. We have to go down this path. We need to address these issues now.
Absolutely, and I think it's so important. You know, readiness, as we speak about it, has evolved into a means of nothing more than pure survival. Incidents happen. Natural disasters happen. You know, acts of violence are happening far too regularly. And it is upon ourselves, the emergency management teams at all levels are prepared to render assistance. And that is what they, you know, both volunteer for or are paid for. But the net result is it takes time in natural disasters or any incident for them to arrive. They will come. It's just, will they get there in time? And everything that we have, you know, built and preach and advocate for, as well as provide, is to, you know, be sure that, you know, you're able to sustain yourself during this period of time, you know, with the necessary tools and the experience and expertise that you're going to need to get there.
Chris, now in where you live, you're down in the Virginia area, and the things, what are the things that you, like Mike and I see, the metropolitan area, your area is the same. Is it different demographically, just a little bit of you know, what is put on the back burner and what is not compared to our area regarding preparedness?
I think there's a facade of preparedness that we have in the Northern Virginia area. You know, are we a little bit, you know, New York's very well funded.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different teams up there. Same thing with Northern Virginia and the what we call the National Capital Region. The thing that we have that you guys don't as much of are some very strong government-centric teams, you know, CBERF and these other strike teams that are meant to protect the government, you know, get the president out, stop an issue before it becomes one, et cetera. And there's a few counties in the nexus, you know, Fairfax, Arlington, that are very well funded, very well equipped, very well trained. But as you get away from the nexus of power, then it becomes like any other county that's relying upon mostly volunteers to provide the bulk of the services.
Yeah, there was a crazy stat, excuse me, that I read with Katrina, and for layman's purposes, for easy listening, it was, you know, for every dollar of preparedness, they didn't, for now being prepared, they spent like $15 for the reaction of after the disaster happened. So it really is, it, you know, I talked about it before, about, you know, taking a test in school. You know, the reason you didn't do well because you didn't prepare for the test. Hey, I'm not at fault here because I, you know, I've had my fair share of bad tests. The first guest on the show, Jerry, said I was an A-plus student. Thanks, Jerry. But I don't know if you guys got a chance to hear that. He's a pretty good guy, real knowledgeable.
I did. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. But now, you know, I was talking to my wife, and she's a school teacher, and I think really, you know, when we talked about before about it starts at home, I think. The way they have prayer in school, for example, I think they should have some form of, even make it fun for the kids about being prepared, like looking at the clouds, you know, dark clouds, get out of the pool. That was a buddy of mine, Mr. Neria from Florida. He was a nonprofit organization a couple of weeks ago. You know, those types of things. Is there anything in your arsenal of education that is looking at the younger kids, maybe high school or maybe even younger than that for schooling?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I was fortunate enough when I was working in Kansas City Emergency Management to be the sponsor and you know, direct the community emergency response team. And part of our grant that we got was to go out and provide training and education to the school. So we started with, you know, working with the upper staff, the administrative staff, to tell them the why. You know, why should they care about me coming out there and training, and then getting the teachers involved, and then getting down to the students' level. And it was an extremely enjoyable process, and the level of satisfaction was extremely high because we could see from the training and getting folks involved, we were working in some underprivileged schools at the time, some inner city schools,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, once the light bulb clicked on, they saw they were part of something bigger. They were part of a larger team, and their job, you know, as we put together the cert, was to help the faculty, was to help the school and other kids that weren't trained. And then they took that back to their community. And then I think actually, you know, Los Angeles and other places where CERT came out of, you know, where these teams are established and well established, you actually see a drop in crime in those areas too, because they belong to something and understand that there's something bigger than what they are out there.
Right, right, right. I think innately people, I think they like being part of something. That's my opinion. I mean, I like sports, but I was in the Boy Scouts, and I like that team philosophy. I've always I've always been a fan of that, and I think your enjoyment of it would be seeing the light going off in the kids' eyes of, you know, realizing, hey, this is, you know, you have to make it fun and cool for them, and obviously you're an educator along those lines. Mike, is there things along out there on the island that like with the ACP that you guys are seeing in your districts like that too?
We do, and you know, it goes right down to, you've made the comment earlier about the defibrillators. That Long Island and I believe parts of New York have required defibrillators in public gathering places be made available. And that was initiated from a tragedy locally here with a young schoolboy playing baseball. He was a pitcher, and he took a line drive to the chest and unfortunately died at the mound. And we've seen continuous education around that, you know, importance of availability of the equipment as well as the training. We also hear stories about, you know, how schools have helped educate, and we all came through, you know, whether it be Heimlich maneuver or
right.
CPR. You know, we see it regularly on the news that, you know, a teacher teaches, you know, the class how to do it, and the next day you hear about a story how he saved his mom that night at dinner. And we've had a number of those situations, and I think what is coming out of it is the kids are a sponge. If we educate them with the appropriate information, we also keep them out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, the more we take, you know, reliance on our own need to administer assistance as well as render to ourselves. It goes right back to what you said earlier about team and camaraderie and commitment to each other. And we clearly have gotten away from that. And in times of need, in times of disaster, we've seen this country come together in ways like no other country can.
Right.
And, you know, we need to remember that, in, you know, when the sun is shining, not when the, you know, not when the, you know, the sky is black. So
right.
It's so important to keep the message going.
I just want to amplify that. We're going to go to station break. Like I say, pay a couple bills, and we'll talk with the guys and wrap it up. All right, be right back.
Attorney Michael Guidro is the cure for your bankruptcy blues. With a bankruptcy success rate of nearly 100%, Michael Guidro is an expert in bankruptcy, credit card settlement, and loan modification. For a consultation, call 201-837-7777. 201-837-7777. Call today and get rid of your bankruptcy blues. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York metro and tri-state area.
At least one in four businesses affected by a disaster never reopen. Let me repeat. At least one in four businesses affected by a disaster, whether it's man-made or natural, never reopen. Yet far too many business owners put off their company's disaster...
You have five new
messages. Can you sign it for me, please?
Don't forget those copies for the presentation.
Disaster plan because they let too many day-to-day things get in the way.
Is that 3 p.m. going to be all right with your schedule?
Hey, don't forget that Stan proposes due.
Be in the conference room in 5 minutes, please.
To save your messages, press 1.
Receive dispatch, truck 47 en route to 614 North Front Street.
Received. Be advised, truck 47, heavy fire showing from the 9th floor. Second alarm being dispatched at this time.
Disasters are unpredictable, but when you have a plan in place, you can better adapt, recover, and stay in control. So don't wait. Visit ready.gov to make your company's disaster plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Disaster Recovery Hour. Chris Plunkett, and it's 11:60 a.m. WVNJ. I got John. excuse me. I keep saying John. I see that John. Hey, Chris. I didn't mean to call you John again. Chris Green and Mike Giancetta. They are from the National Ready Corporation. But I do have a quick question. Not a quick question. It's from Larry. It's on the web. You mentioned the poor in Mississippi. This is what Jerry was talking about before, but this part of the question is applicable. Is there an agency or company that supplies, through donations, these types of kits to people in disaster-prone areas that are disadvantaged? Is there, guys?
Part of what we do is we pledge 10% back of our net proceeds to go back. In fact, we just donated 10 kits to a local police department here in Northern Virginia. So that's one way that we give back to the community, because the kits don't do anybody any good sitting on the shelf.
Sure, right.
Number two, we work through other organizations, police officer, benevolent funds, the PVA, other organizations, to either raise funding to get the kits out or to donate kits to those in need. Both sides of the house also, you know, the advanced casualty care kits as well as the preparedness kits.
There, you know, excuse me, before we went to the break, we talked about, you know, Mike, you said the sunny day, and it is a great country. And then when, with the news on that Sunday night, with the killing of Osama, in front of the White House, Times Square, downtown, by the towers, we all came out and, we're chanting and so on and so forth. And then, obviously with 9/11 after that, there was a community inside this nation that was bonded again. And I agree, and you think about it, it's like that day-to-day stuff could really get you off the what's the really important. Where's the coffee smelling? Where's the roses? You know what I'm saying, Mike?
Absolutely.
It is a fight without a doubt to say, stop. We got am I prepared for the what ifs? There's too many what ifs out there. Let's go. We have another question there. There must be a tremendous amount of fear that resides in the elderly at times. There's a devastation. Is there anything in place there where they can call and get updates or just have someone to calm their fears? There was today in the news up here in the city. There's going to be alerts now. Mike, did you see that on the news with the alerts going right to your phones?
I received that maybe ahead of some as a result of some of our involvement with some of the agencies that we associate with. But yes, the public awareness, the information dissemination is critical to preparedness. And, the earlier you know about a situation, the better you can be to deal with it.
Chris, now is there a system in place, or is there on the books down there in your area?
Sure, we have Alert DC, we have Alert Northern Virginia, we have special EM emergency management alerts that come out that hit your text you or hit cell phone. But the other interesting thing I wanted to bring up was last week, Frank Fugate came out in a written statement to talk about the power. And and understanding social media as a communication.
Right, right.
And in fact, I know most of DOD is using Facebook right now to help communicate to the younger soldiers, sailors, and airmen out there because they're usually on Facebook. And it's a communications tool method that we use. And I think for larger part, once we get it a little better organized and understand the business rules in there, how to activate it, basically, it's going to be an extremely powerful tool because it all comes down to education and communication.
Mm-hmm.
You have to communicate.
Yeah, I mean, the Blackberries and the iPhones and all the rest of that stuff. it's funny. I remember my mother. The first time I saw my mother with a cell phone, you just think of the old ringy dingy dial thing, and that she's doing her texting. But Michelle, your question about the elderly and the fears. This social media is a good avenue to receive information and say, listen, we are on high alert or medium alert, whichever color we're using nowadays. But Michelle, I would think having phones, and I guess I think in another couple of months the chips could be automatically in everybody's phone where it's going to be uploaded to for alerts and communications. Gentlemen, the website. How do the listeners take a look at the website?
We can. They could be. We have two sites that are coming on board now. We have ReadyCorporation.com. And also at gianco.com, GIANCO. We'll have a full listing of our contingency plans and equipment and the kits that we've been discussing. We've been fortunate that things are moving quickly and, we're getting up to speed on the technology side as well.
Mm. Chris, with a lot of your background, you have the eyes and ears of some of, or the pulse maybe of some of the government side of it, so which helps you really understand both sides of the fence. You have the public, and then you have the navigation of the government people, whatever it could be, mayors, could be senators, whatever. I don't know the full weight of it, but that is an advantage to educate. Would you say?
Oh, absolutely. Just the experience that I've been fortunate enough to be involved in multiple large-scale response efforts, both the government side and as a contractor, and as part of a USAR team, a DMAT team. It's very fortunate. And, being where we are now and being able to do the information, key thing here is to let all your listeners know we're all targets. No one's immune to random acts of violence, whether it's a targeted or absolutely random. You know, before we used to, you know, worry about just the accidents or mishaps, you know, someone falls and hurts themselves or has a car accident, and now there's folks out there deliberately looking and planning. I mean, this is deliberate planning to attack Americans wherever and whenever they can. And that needs to be in the forefront of everyone's mind. So, I mean, see something, say something, period. Don't worry about woulda, shoulda, coulda. Don't worry about am I getting in someone else's business. You know, see something, say something. Something doesn't smell right. Something doesn't look right. Tell somebody.
Right. Mike, before we wrap up, where where do you see National Ready Corp in a couple of years? I have some ideas. I was when I was looking at the stuff a couple of weeks ago, and then again speaking with my brother John, you know, about society getting involved, and then these are the, you know, the kits, and you do have different types of products. What would be an optimistic where you'd like to see you know, public being involved in the National Ready Corp?
Looking to us as the go-to team for, you know, for violence-related and health-related benefit. We obviously see the, you know, the marketplace, you know, public, private, commercial, municipal, schools, stadiums, the need, the gathering of, you know, people in these public places are unfortunately, you know, prime targets to, as Chris so eloquently said, random acts of violence. You know, what we're hearing, what we're seeing is something we've never experienced in the past, and now we see it on a almost on a daily basis. These areas, these communities, the need is there. You know, many of the consultants that we work with, you know, who provide risk assessment, at the end of the day, we all have the same message. You know, we recognize where threats may be coming, but what we've hoped to be able to provide is the solution. And then obviously the experience, the expertise, and the training to support it as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I said it before, this is the reality that we're in. And again, Disaster Recovery Hour, we want to encompass a lot of things that could, for preparedness, and, you know, you should be able to go to the ball game. You should be able to go to the park and not be in fear of something bad's going to happen. But here's the thing, if it does happen, there is the kit there, or the defib there that that can be with somebody properly trained. Again, it's listen. You know, laws are made because they come out of condition. The voters, you know, that was a tongue tie for me. But you know, they say, listen, Megan's Law came off of the parents and the lobbying of the people, and then they brought it to their representative, and then he brought it up to the floor for a vote. It's the same thing. Grant you, are we? Is it a product that is made privately, and then there's going to have to be a cost to it? Of course there is. But however, you know, I think about the Homeland Security and about the towers, and I think about if somebody was running for Congress, it's just my opinion, and it states at the beginning of this program that the station isn't responsible for my opinions, that if somebody was running for state senator or congressman and said, listen, we're going to need to raise taxes X amount of dollars because we have a threat that wants to harm us on our soil. So vote for me, but I'm going to be raising your packets. You know what? That guy wouldn't get voted in. He wouldn't get voted in. So, but this is now where we are. This is, again, it's my opinion. I think you guys might share. You can. We have a couple seconds to go. People need to, you know, unfortunately, we're going to need to spend a couple of bucks in order to have a little safe haven. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And the key right now is to, you know, help identify those funding sources, frankly. And we're actively doing that. You know, we have a number of clients at municipal and public level that are, you know, extremely interested in the kits for what they do provide their civil service professionals. But at the end of the day, they need help finding that money, too.
Sure.
And we're actively working with them to help identify some of those grants and funding mechanisms and organizations that support these agencies. So we look forward to, you know, hearing from everyone and obviously helping, you know, meet the needs and the challenges of today.
Great. Chris, Mike, I appreciate it. Chris, anything finalizing here? We got a couple seconds.
Well, it's everyone's responsibility to be prepared. And right. you have to stay vigilant. You have to have a willingness to act. You have to have the education and something to move forward with. You have to have a kit.
Excellent.
And,
Gentlemen, I appreciate it. Mike, hopefully I can see you sometime this week, or if not next week.
Absolutely. And, look forward to it.
Chris, we'll exchange, go through the social media and also with the emails. And Disaster Recovery Hour, your host Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2. Guys, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Take care of yourselves.